You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight, we're going to talk Action Comics number 1002, Detective Comics number 987, Justice League Dark number 2, The Flash number 53, and The Terrifics number 7. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Brendan Fraser has been cast for the voice of Robot Man in DC Universe's Doom Patrol series. In the comic books, Robot Man is Cliff Steele, a stunt driver whose brain is implanted in a robot body following a near-fatal accident. Brendan Fraser will also appear in flashbacks as Cliff Steele, while actor Riley Shanahan will portray Robot Man's physical presence.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I'm like I said, I've been really curious just to see what the Doom Patrol looks like as a TV show. They don't need to sell me any more than they already have, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool they've cast Brendan Fraser. My gut tells me he'll fit well in that role.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, up next for DC News, Tyler Hoechlin is scheduled to reprise his role as Superman in CW's upcoming Flash Arrow Supergirl crossover, which I'm very excited about.
And finally.
Yes, I've been waiting to see him come back. He was a great addition to Supergirl 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
It's been that long already.
He was so good as Superman. I understand you definitely, the focus should still definitely be her show. And he must have other stuff going on, but I really wish that they would incorporate him more. I'm really excited. I'm really excited that he's going to be on, especially the crossover of all things for him to come back on. That's the perfect one, because I've been dying to see him interact with the Flash and Green Arrow, and now Batwoman too. Like, that's great. That's really cool.
Yeah. Now we just need to get Batman.
I have to say, I'm a little bit bummed that the Legends aren't going to be on this, just because it'd be really great to have Ray Palmer make a cameo there and kind of have like a little winking moment between him and Superman.
That would be kind of cool. But with Legends coming on, though, that would be a lot of characters.
I agree. Part of me wonders if they're going to find a way to bring him on briefly.
I wouldn't be surprised if Sarah ends up being in the crossover either. I wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I totally agree with you that the Legends as a whole definitely clog the show up a little bit too much, but they've made a couple jokes about it before. I think it'd be cool to have the two of them actually interact, just even if it's briefly.
Yeah, that would be cool. And not only are we getting Superman, we are getting Lois Lane also. I think that's pretty cool. Now
it's great.
They haven't cast Lois Lane yet, so it'll be interesting to see who they cast for that.
It would be really cool if we got Lois Lane popping up a little bit more in the show after that, too. That would be neat, and it might give them more of an excuse to bring Superman back occasionally.
Yeah, that would be cool, but I don't see that happening.
I agree. The one thing I think is the most encouraging thing about this crossover is the fact that Superman's appearing in it, Lois Lane, and we're at least getting Batwoman. We're not getting Batman, which I understand, and that might have something to do with Gotham being a show, so I get that. But it does seem like DC's loosening their grip a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, which makes sense. I mean, DC's known for having their multiverse, so let's have a multiverse.
I agree. I'm very excited. As a fan, I'm super excited, but I'm also like kind of encouraged by this, because it kind of suggests that maybe we're going to get more stuff like this in the future, that this will maybe not be as rare as it's been.
And it would have been nice to get more Deathstroke on Arrow last year.
Oh, I do, yeah, that's the other thing. I would love to see Deathstroke come back again. And it clearly it's not an actor thing. The guy has made it very clear that he'll come back. So I do hope it even doesn't look like the Deathstroke movie is really happening right now, or it's in a weird limbo. So the fact that you're taking him off the table, but then not doing anything with him anyway, I mean, come on, just let him be on Arrow.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, and up for our next bit of DC news, Kyle Secor has been cast as Dr. Thomas Snow, the absent father of Caitlin. Secor is slated to play a recurring role in the series, building on the character's brief mention all throughout the series leading up to now. Dr. Snow is an extremely intelligent geneticist who has been MIA for decades. Upon returning to Central City, he will try his best to make up for lost time with Caitlin. But what Caitlin doesn't know is that Thomas is hiding a secret. Ooh, there's a big surprise there.
Well, they've definitely hinted before that he knew about the Caitlin, like the Killer Frost side of her. So I would imagine that the secret has something to do with that. To be honest, though, this news surprised me. I was in my head, he was dead. I don't know that they ever said that, but I think I always just assumed that.
I don't ever remembering them mentioning him being dead. And this could be a story they've been wanting to do for a while, and now they've made time for it. It kind of fits in with what happened to her last season, for sure.
Oh yeah, I agree. You could definitely see them laying the groundwork for it.
And then Susan Walters will also reprise her role as Caitlin's mother, Dr. Carla Tannhauser. So, which we've seen before, I think. 2 seasons ago, if I remember right.
I think very briefly last season as well.
Oh, maybe it was last season too. I can't remember. But anyway,
It was mainly, you're right, it was mainly 2 seasons ago, but I think there was a brief moment this past season she was in as well.
we already know Caitlin has a strained relationship with her mother already, so
Yeah.
it'll be an interesting mix because with all three of them coming back. They're gonna meet. They're all gonna be together at some point, so it'll be interesting.
Yeah. My hope is that this is finally a strong Caitlin Snow story. They've always kind of struggled. Like, it seems like each show kind of struggles with particular characters of coming up with something, and then not just coming up with something, they come up with something that's actually good and holds the audience's attention. And they've always kind of had that potential with Caitlin, but they never seem to fully capitalize on it. So hopefully this is the thing that really puts the spotlight on her and does so in a quality way, I guess.
Yeah, let's hope her story is good this season. All right, other DC news. America's Got Talent contortionist Troy James has been cast as Ragdoll for CW's Flash. James confirmed on Twitter that he's scheduled to be in the 5th episode of The Flash.
Should be interesting. I mean, it's a definitely a cool opportunity for them, and hopefully I'm sure it'll be a villain of the week kind of thing, but those can be good if they find a way to be entertaining, so we'll see.
All right, and for our next bit of DC news, a new daily news show focused on all things DC was announced, including availability for viewing. DC Daily will be available on DC Universe service, with select segments also being available at no additional cost on other online channels. DC Daily will offer fans entertaining news, insight, exclusive guest appearances, interviews, and panel discussions with some of the most knowledgeable voices in the DC Universe. A live stream was supposed to kick off on August 29th, hosted by Kevin Smith, and I have not seen that yet. Have you had a chance to see that, Cletus?
I have not.
So that's already happened. I'm sure it's online by now, probably out there everywhere.
I think it's a pretty cool idea, and I also think it's a for a couple. So I think, obviously, just a news thing is really cool for DC to do. It's a good way to come up with programming, so to speak, for their online service. I also think it's going to be a really cool way to help promote their comic stuff, and really help because that's one of the things we've talked about before is that. As cool as these TV shows and movies are, they have really not moved the needle at all in terms of comic sales. And this might be a way to help get some people who are maybe watching DC Universe to watch, like, Teen Titans, for example, or one of the other shows, maybe Young Justice, And then that news show can be a way for them to actually see some comics that maybe they interest them as well.
Yeah, let's hope so. And I know, because I've seen it online, they've announced that DC Universe is going to be debuting on September 15th, Batman Day.
Nice.
So, I didn't know if you'd heard that or not.
I remember them that they had said the date, but I did not remember the specific day. I'm excited because we talked about this. I got whatever the special deal was because I'm a sucker. So
I
I'm really excited to check it out.
am too. I'm very excited. And it's only 2 weeks away, so
So close.
it's very close to my birthday. So happy birthday to me.
Yeah.
All right, and in other DC news, writer Brian Edward Hill and artist Dexter Soy will launch a new Batman and the Outsiders title spinning out of Hill's Detective Comics run, which we'll be talking about tonight. Now, the team up's supposed to consist of Batman, The Signal, Katana, Black Lightning, and Orphan. And the title's exact premises remains a mystery, unless you've read this week's Detective Comics. So we'll talk about that more later. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, DC has revealed that Nightwing will be injured sometime this fall, but it's looking like the resulting physical changes will be more lasting than fans expect, and it might influence the way the hero fights crime in the near future. I'm wondering what the heck they're going to do, Cletus.
So it's been a running joke for some time. Oh, it's like at least 4 or 5 years, if not before that, that Nightwing has both a really nice and really recognizable rear end. The funniest thing to me would be that he injures his ass.
Something tells me that's not it, Cletus.
Batgirl is devastated. And Nightwing can't look at himself the same in the mirror, and it all just kind of spirals from there.
So, I'm curious to see what this injury is.
I'm just saying, I could be right. You don't know.
You're right, I don't know. But the injury is supposed to take place in Batman 55 and 56. Batman 55 is in September, I think the later half of September, and then issue 56, I think, is supposed to be in October. And then Nightwing's also supposed to start shipping twice a month in September.
Why?
I don't know. So, and then the same week, oh, this is the other thing I wanted to say. The same week that Batman 56 is released, Nightwing number 50 comes out, and it's going to pick up with the aftermath of Nightwing's injury. That's all we've been told about it, except that they're saying that it's his injury is supposed to lead Nightwing in a new direction in his crime-fighting career. So, curious what they're going to do with that character, and you know it's going to happen in Batman, so you know we're going to be reviewing it. I wonder if this was an idea of Tom King,
I would think so.
since it's happening in Batman 55 and 56.
Yeah. I would imagine that it was his idea.
All right, well, that's it for DC News. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
The Death Star plans are not in the main computer.
Where are those transmissions you intercepted, including those of the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast? I need my weekly dose of sci-fi news with movie and TV reviews and commentary.
We intercepted no transmissions! This is a consular ship!
If this is a consular ship, where is the ambassador?
Sorry, I was indisposed.
I will give it a moment to air out, if you know what I mean.
Who needs the ambassador? I thought I heard someone call out for me. What in the bloody hell did you do to Ramus? Speak up! Which one of those chest buttons calls your supervisor, you imbecile?
Geez, mister. Honestly, he was, like that when we got here. Right, fellas?
Mister, I am an ambassador.
Let me see your identification.
Shut it, Bob. You are as clumsy as you are stupid. He doesn't have to show you your ID.
We don't need to see his identification.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Libsyn.com, and Stitcher Radio. The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic book talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics number 1002. I have to tell you, Cletus, the post-it notes on Clark's desk or computer, they were friggin' hilarious.
They were pretty funny.
And I made sure I read all of them.
This was a good comic. I really enjoyed this comic. I think I have to say I'm not surprised by this, just given generally what Bendis tends to write best. I kind of enjoy this storyline a little bit more than the Superman one. I think they're both good, don't get me wrong, but this does seem to play to his strengths better as a writer. Just keep it kind of keeping it like, you know, based around the newspaper and a lot more grounded, I think.
Yeah, it was really good. In this issue, we see Ms. Good try to print a story about Superman dropping a gangster to his death. Perry wasn't having that.
Yeah.
And what I thought was funny was he basically puts Clark on the story secretly to dig a little deeper. And when Clark gives him a little pushback about that, he's like, oh, I have Lois do it for your stories all the time. I thought that was pretty funny.
I did too. One thing I thought was a little odd was, don't get me wrong, like I definitely chuckled when they had the kind of meta joke about Guardian, and the person was like, nobody's really thinking about you at all. It was funny, but at the same time, I was like, I don't know that that's true, because he's in Supergirl.
That is true.
You know, like, if it wasn't for that show, that joke would definitely be accurate and also funny. Instead, it was funny, but I was like, I don't know that that's true.
Maybe Bendis isn't watching Supergirl. He's writing too many Superman titles.
Yeah. It was an odd I thought that was an odd cameo, especially because it doesn't look as of now like Guardian's gonna factor in at all. It was odd. It was an odd inclusion.
Yeah, it was kind of an odd inclusion.
Like, it would make sense if they were gonna work him into the story, but it doesn't look like they're going to. And I could be wrong. It's super early in the story, so it's something where we could see him pop up again. But from all appearances, it looked like that was just it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of odd.
It was odd. It was kind of a cameo thing, because he didn't really do anything except for get in trouble. The other thing I thought was weird, that Cat Grant showed up.
Well, and that was the thing. That was why when she showed up, I was like, so I'm pretty sure she's showing up in part because of the Supergirl TV show. Because it almost felt like he was writing her a little bit like the TV show Cat Grant, too. And so it was like, so you're aware of Cat Grant being popular because of the show, but we're going to make a joke about Guardian and ignore the... It was odd. I know this is dumb. This didn't bother me at all as reading it, but it was still something like I couldn't help but notice.
Yeah, and Cat Grant lets it slip that Lois is, she saw a galley of Lois's book and thought it was really good, and Clark's like, huh? And she's like, oops.
Yeah.
Let the cat out of the bag.
That one surprised me a little bit, that would kind of slip under Clark's radar. I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe if she saw some, like, advanced copy, which would make sense. Like, don't get me wrong, it would make sense. It surprised me nonetheless when she said that. I was like, really? I feel like that's something Superman would catch.
The book isn't enrolled. It wasn't released yet.
Yeah.
But then, because of that, Clark goes and finds Lois.
Yes.
So, I'm wondering, why is she hiding? Was she just wanting to finish her book? Did she come back early from the trip? Because we didn't see John at all. Did she not end up going at all? That's another thing I was wondering.
That seems to be the most likely answer to me. I'm betting she didn't go at all.
Clark is not going to be happy about that.
No. I'm really curious to see what this conversation is going to be. Just also because I'm really curious what Bendis is planning on doing with Lois specifically. Because I know one of our biggest concerns was that he was going to break up the family. And I don't think that he's going to do that, but it's still kind of like, well, you're kind of dangling it a little bit. So where are you going with this, buddy?
Now, he said he wasn't planning on it. So let's hope not. Because I ain't going to be too happy of a camper if he does.
I don't think, I agree. I don't think he is going to, but I can't help but be a little nervous anyway.
You know what? The fact that he's making us nervous is a testament to his writing, even though he's told us, hey, I'm not breaking him up. He's got us worried enough that he is breaking them up.
Yeah. So, and I really enjoyed the scene with Clark going into the bar and interviewing all of the kind of henchmen guys mourning the loss of one of their own. That was both really funny, but also really cool seeing him kind of like, apply his trade, so to speak, as a journalist. It was cool.
Yeah, I agree with you, because we don't always get that much in these comics.
It was just a great scene. It was one of those things, like, there was a lot of comedy in it, too, but there was also that kind of insight into his character, and also, like, kind of getting glimpses of these other random characters. It was fun. It was just a really fun, well-written scene.
Yeah. Plus, we got to learn a little bit more about this yogurt character who died last issue.
A terrible name.
I know. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics number 987. Now, I gotta admit, Cletus, I thought because we talked about this a few weeks ago, I thought the Karma storyline kind of was gonna go on hiatus for a while. But
you were wrong.
I was wrong. Thanks to be quick to point that out.
You're welcome. I've been waiting. As soon as I read this, I was like, Andrew was wrong.
Yes, I was.
This is what I read comics for, guys. Is I look for instances to rub Andrew's nose in it.
Yeah, he does. All right. So Karma breaks into Wayne Enterprises and basically he kills one of the security guards and takes the other one hostage. One that we find out that Bruce Wayne has a personal interest in helping out.
It seems pretty classic, kind of like that side of Batman to know his employees and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
About their lives. It's like, yep, I believe all of this.
Yeah. It definitely felt in line with Batman.
Yeah, it was like, it was one of those moments that was like, this could not be more in character for Batman.
One of the things we learn from Katana is that a Markovian black market dealer, and her name was Martina Emma, I don't even know how to pronounce the last name, Amentivia, whatever, put that helmet that Karma's wearing on sale on the dark web, and that's where Karma got his helmet. And we also found out what some of the abilities of the helmet actually has. They actually told us. It has telepathy, it has enhanced strength and speed, it gives him some sort of sight, it keeps him from feeling pain.
Which was the big one.
Yeah. Learned. Batman also deduced that Karma's synaptic responses probably have become dependent on the helmet. Removing it might make him a mental invalid.
Yeah, so the takedown of Karma was kind of what we kind of expected, ultimately. Like, you get the mask off of him, you beat him. The thing that surprised me was that, if I'm remembering correctly, the last issue ended with this sort of kind of pseudo-cliffhanger with Katana. And she really was not a factor, almost at all, in the comic. I thought that was odd. I mean, ultimately she gives Batman that one piece of advice that kind of helps him beat Karma. But it wasn't that big of a deal.
No. They made a big deal about him getting some sort of training, but ultimately there was no training that I saw.
It almost felt like we missed an issue. Didn't it to you?
Yeah.
I couldn't help but read it. I was like, I know we didn't miss one, but it feels like we didn't read an issue.
But we didn't.
That was odd. I have to say, I understand, like, you know, the nature of superhero comics. You always kind of want to have something to keep the reader coming back to read the next issue. But that one was just so odd to leave it. I wasn't expecting, you know, I didn't need Katana to just do like a whole Karate Kid training with Batman. But I expected something. So that was, it was odd. It was just not what I was expecting. And I have to admit, I will agree with you. Actually, I was also surprised that this was kind of the last issue for the Karma story. I was expecting it to go, because I thought this was going to be kind of an interlude like you did. And it wasn't. It just wasn't at all. It was really just the final issue.
Yeah, the final issue. And hey, we're announcing Batman and the Outsiders, because it was, this issue basically hit you over the head with a baseball bat to tell you that there's going to be a Batman and the Outsiders comic coming soon.
And you know, and that's kind of what I felt like, why they had the whole Katana thing in there, was they were trying to figure out how to shoehorn her into the story because she's going to be on the team. To be honest, I thought it was handled about as well as when they shoehorned her into the Suicide Squad movie with no explanation in that either. I don't know what it is about her character, but it's just like, oh, we want her in this story, but I don't understand how we're going to do it, so let's just throw her in there and not explain it.
You know, they could have easily fit her in by having her track down the black market transaction. Oh, you know, oh, Katana's here. What are you doing here? Well, I'm after this helmet that was sold on the black market. Oh, we're after the same dude. Let's team up.
Yeah.
Boom.
Exactly.
Done.
That was perfect. That's such a classic superhero interaction, too. I don't think either of us would have bat an eye at that.
Nope, we wouldn't have. But they didn't do that. Instead, we're going to train Batman without training him.
It was just odd. And she didn't really, she was just not present really in the comic. And it was just like, I get her being on that team. I mean, just for, she's been on the Outsiders before. And also just like, she's a cool character to be on that team. So I have no problem there whatsoever. I just thought you could have done literally anything else to better incorporate that.
I thought the team working together going after Karma is the best we've seen in Rebirth so far. Because that fiasco we had before with the team trying to work together, this was a lot better.
It was a lot better. I will say that the Signal is still, they have not yet proven a purpose to his character. I get what they were doing because he couldn't be Robin because Damian's Robin. So but like plan B that they came up with for him has just not done anything for me personally yet.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I read the first issue of The Signal, and that was it.
It's just, I just don't get, like, it was such a, and I think the biggest problem so Scott Snyder's really, he's the one who created Duke in the first place, and then he's the one that made him into The Signal. He kind of painted himself into a corner because he made it such a story-specific purpose for being The Signal that any future story, he essentially doesn't serve a purpose anymore because he's already served that purpose.
He's still around, though.
But you know what I mean? That was the one thing I thought was odd. When we were reading Metal, I was like, this seems like a bad idea because Metal's only going to happen one time. Like, that story only happens once. And then what do you do with this character after that?
You kill him off.
And I'm not arguing for that, especially... the thing I don't understand is that King wrote something really interesting with Duke. We're setting him up with Gotham Girl, and then that has just completely disappeared. Well, the last time we saw Gotham Girl after a huge hiatus was that she was hanging out with Bane, which I'm really curious to see what's up with that. But so we still don't know what, like, at some point she and Duke were supposed to end up together, at least at one point, and I would have loved to have seen that story. Was at least interesting. That's the only interesting thing I've seen with Duke in the last, what, like 2 years?
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. Gotham Girl, I know. I'm very curious. She just disappeared off the face of the earth, and there she is with Bane. I'm like, what the heck? And then no explanation. You're killing us, King.
Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I've loved the stories that King has come up with since Gotham Girl's arc, but like that was a really good arc. Like, I got invested in her character because it was so good. And then like we've been talking about, she just disappeared, and then they bring her back in such an intriguing way. And now I'm like, what's going on again? I stopped thinking about it for a little bit.
We know it's going to pop up again. This Bane storyline is important. He's doing stuff behind the scenes right now, and he's going to eventually show up. My gut is telling me so.
I am, of all of the characters that were in that scene, she is the one I am most intrigued as to what exactly she's doing. Like, there's a lot of really intriguing stuff going on in that scene, don't get me wrong. Like, there's a lot of really cool characters. Like, Thomas Wayne Batman, for example, what's he doing? But she, for me personally, she's the one the most. I saw that one, I was like, ooh. Okay, that's interesting. What's going on there?
So, yeah, I'm curious to find out. I'm wondering if it ties into Doomsday Clock somehow. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense for Thomas Wayne Batman to be there.
I would agree with that. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. That does make sense.
So, that's the only thing I can think of. And we already know Batman's heading down this road where we've seen in Doomsday Clock storyline already that Gotham City hates him. And we're already seeing him start going down this path towards that. So
I know we've transitioned over to the main Batman title here, but don't you feel like this trial thing was kind of the first stepping stone towards that?
Yes.
Kind of breaking Gotham's trust a little bit. Unintentionally, like that's not what he wants, but that's kind of what he's done.
Yeah, it is. And we're going to see that more, I'm guessing, at least in the Batman title.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not sure what they're going to do next in Detective Comics.
Yeah, I was wondering that myself, too. So I finished this, and I also knew about the Outsiders title that was coming up, and I was like, I thought this was going to be about the Outsiders. So now what is Detective Comics going to be about? I'm kind of curious. I mean, if they can make it into good standalone detective stories, that'd be really cool.
That would be cool.
That would be appropriate to the title.
I would love to have a true crime type Detective Comics title where Batman's focusing more on solving, you know, true crime type of stories.
And it doesn't even need to be Batman all the time. Honestly, it could be any of the... You could rotate between the various Bat characters.
Yeah, you could.
You could even do like a Jim Gordon one. That would be cool.
That would be
cool. How cool would that be?
That would be cool. Tim Drake, you know, some of the others that are don't have their own title.
DC, call us. We've got a great idea for you.
Yes, we do. Were you surprised to see Superman in this issue?
That felt like it was fun, but so unnecessary. They did nothing with that.
No, they didn't, except for Superman tells Jefferson, try not to become him. Okay.
I liked the idea of the cameo, especially the way Batman was like, he's coming, just tell him what you're doing, there's no point lying. I liked all of that, but then the actual scene between the two of them was kind of a letdown, I guess. I wasn't expecting like 8 pages, don't get me wrong. I expected about the length that we got, but I guess I expected something more interesting than the interaction that we got.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a little bit of a letdown, but whatever.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Dark number 2. So I'm curious to see what you thought about this title, because I know you liked the New 52 Justice League Dark series.
Part of it, I have to clarify, it was a very specific part of the New 52 run. I'm really intrigued by this. And actually, the thing that caught my interest the most was that they acknowledged the two different Dr. Fates. Because that's been something I've been very curious about for like the last year and a half to 2 years, is if the New 52 Dr. Fate was still around or not. And we got our answer in this. They accidentally break that pot. And what was the New 52 Dr. Fate pops out, and it's like, guys, Kent Nelson is not in control. It's not him. Was it Nabu?
Yeah, Nabu.
So he's the one that's in control, which was a cool little scene and very ominous. But also for me, it was really exciting. So it was like, oh, Yes, God, that's awesome. This guy's back. I know it probably didn't mean anything to you, but I was super excited by that scene.
You're right. It didn't mean anything to me, but I still found it very interesting. I was like, ooh, who's this guy? And, of course, they tell you it was a previous Dr. Fate, and I was like, ooh, this is getting really good.
Yeah, I am very intrigued. I do think that the comic is potentially running with the Swamp Thing. The Swamp Thing part, I thought maybe they were laying too many crumbs, you know what I mean? You've got almost too many mysteries going on, so I'm a little bit concerned about that. But overall, I'm super intrigued. I like the idea of sort of a villainous Dr. Fate, but really, he's not really the villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really interesting to me. I'm super intrigued by the new 52 Fate being back. Yeah, I love all of the guys that are like the cast for this book. I'm really interested to see where it goes.
I am too. I was happy to see John Constantine make a cameo.
Yeah.
So you can't
have a Team Magic book and not use Constantine. I know he's not really a team player as a part of his character, but like, come on, he's probably at this point like at least top three for DC's magical characters as far as popularity, if not the most popular.
So it'll be fun if he pops up a lot too. I think
he's going to be on the team. I think he's just doing his usual Constantine thing where he's reluctant but really is kind of on the team.
I could see that. So yeah, this book was really good.
And it was like appropriately weird. Like you had, it really kind of tapped into the kind of like spooky horror element without being over the top. It was just, it was really enjoyable, and it was hitting all the right notes for what I want out of a Justice League Dark book. It felt very reminiscent of the Lemire part of the New 52 run, which was the good run. So I've been a big fan of the first two issues, and I'm also definitely excited to see what comes next.
When this issue opened up, we had that story with Diana when she was 12 years old. That was kind of dark for Wonder Woman, I thought.
It was dark. It was creepy. It was really well drawn, too, because you get the narration saying it seems like their bodies were joining in impossible ways. And then you actually see that, because that's the beauty of comics. You can actually kind of bring those words to life. And it was like, what's going on?
It was very bizarre and dark. And then Diana gets branded somehow. I'm very curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
What does
it mean? This is just, like I said, it's hitting all the right notes. It's exactly what I want out of a Justice League Dark style story. It's very similar to the movie that we got that was also really dark, but just incredibly intriguing and engaging story.
Yeah. The other thing I liked about this issue was, you know, once they got going on their journey, they were all, you know, they were going to see Dr. Fate, but they actually wanted to talk to Naboo because they thought he had the answers. And we found out that, yeah, he's the one who's wanting to end magic and opening the portal for these other kind to enter our world. So very interesting. All right, well, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk more comics.
Hello, podcast fans. My name is Chris Jones, and I'm here to tell you about the Nerd Bliss podcast. Now, of all the geek-oriented podcasts out there, we are definitely one of them. Yes, we talk about Star Trek and Star Wars and cosplay and Marvel and DC and the usual. But as geeks, we embrace anyone with very specialized knowledge, like triathletes or improv comedians or musicians. So we try to bring them in and let them share their geekiness with you to help broaden some horizons, and maybe you'll learn something. Maybe we'll learn something. You can find our entire catalog at nerdblisspodcast.com on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play Music, Player FM, and we are now proud to be a part of the ESO Network. Once again, we are the Nerd Bliss Podcast. Thank you, and pod bless.
And we're back. Let's talk The Flash number 53. So this issue opens up with a flashback back in the 25th century. And it was kind of weird. We get Commander Cold's origin. We see he's a cop, and he's going up against an evil elongated man. The elongated maniac.
He was really creepy. I was almost a little disappointed that's all we got out of that, because it was such an interesting take on that character. It was like, this is a good villainous version of Elongated Man. It was kind of almost a waste to only have that brief scene. It was very well utilized. It was a very well written scene. It was like, oh man, I kind of want to see more of that.
Yeah, I do too. I like the way they drew him.
I feel like that's one of those characters that's so interesting that some other writer is going to see that at some point and be like, oh, you know, I want to do something with that.
One of the things we saw in this is Commander Cold got his gear he has now from a mysterious hooded judge. Did you get the feeling it was Professor Zoom?
It's not Professor Zoom. It's Zoom. It's the other. It's the just Zoom.
Oh, just Zoom.
So not Eobard, but well, we know that it's Hunter's Almond. We know it's Hunter's Almond because we saw him wearing that outfit during the Flash War story.
I thought I remembered that, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, so that was sort of interesting. So we know the end game to that, right, is that ultimately Hunter Zolomon is trying to set up this scheme. But that's sort of, we're seeing kind of a flashback before that. So that was kind of cool. It was a kind of nice little backstory to that, and I almost kind of made me wonder if there's some other stories with some of the other renegades.
Now, in this issue, we see Commander Cold and the Flash go up against the Trickster, who's pumped up on the Strength Force. Flash was able to beat him using his vibrational powers.
Yeah, we see that somehow that disrupts Trickster's connection to the Strength Force because it's not bonded to him the way the Speed Force is to Barry. And then eventually we get the Strength Force inhabiting Barry as well, and it's just like...
That was weird.
It got dumb. I'm not going to lie. This story, I was like, I'm really... We've talked about this. I'm just not buying into these other forces as an idea. And they're not convincing me with each story. Like, I'm like, you're just convincing me that I was right, that this is dumb.
Okay. Speaking of dumb, Barry, why would you let Wolf lock you up?
I don't understand how Barry is so oblivious to Wolf's obvious bad guy-ness. I understand that maybe he doesn't know the full extent or what this specific scheme is, but like he keeps saying, like, Trickster clearly is scared of Wolf and is scared of Iron Heights in a way that isn't just like, I don't want to be in jail scared. And also his partner hinted at something, and yet Barry continues to be this idiot that we've seen throughout the entire run. And I get really frustrated every once in a while. I'm like, Barry Allen is not this big of a moron. Why do you keep riding him this way?
Yeah, I've been wondering that too. It doesn't feel like Barry.
I hate to say this, but he's an idiot. Like, the Barry in this entire Flash run is an idiot. He's just dumb. And I don't understand how you continue to write him that way. And how the editorial team, I understand maybe that the writer isn't intending to write him that way, but that's how it's coming across. Like, I understand that. I don't accusing him of intentionally doing this. But, like, this is exactly why you have an editorial team. It's because then they look at it and go, hey, you know what? This isn't working. You need to do something like this so that the character doesn't come across consistently like a moron.
Now, opposite to that, they seem to be getting Iris to be more interesting characters than she has been. I like the fact that she's researching the Strength Force. I'm liking the fact that she's getting some of her memories back, so much so that she gets confused whether she's married to Barry or not.
Yeah.
So, I'm very curious how that's going to play out.
The other thing this seemed to be setting up is it almost felt like they were turning Commander Cold into Captain Cold.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too.
Which is intriguing, but also unnecessary because Snart's not dead. It would make sense if, like, Snart had died and they were trying to figure out a clever way to still have Captain Cold.
Yeah.
But he's alive and is perfectly fine.
And we don't need two Captain Colds.
It's like, it's the same. It's one of those things where, like, I was like, I'm intrigued by the story, but also I don't understand the point of the story because Captain Cold's around and is perfectly useful. Like, I don't get what they're doing there, what the ultimate goal of that is.
I don't know either. I don't know. He wants to put Barry and Trickster down permanently. Yeah, you're heading towards villainous there, dude. So I don't know where they're going with that either. Well, guess we'll see, huh? another storyline we're hoping wraps up soon.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, The Terrifics number 7, which continues to be awesome.
It's just such a fun comic. You see, Lemire writes this old school style so well, but still with like enough modern flair to it that it doesn't read like it's outdated.
The issue opens up with Tom Strong, and it felt very much like a Golden Age story.
I love the way it almost starts out in a comic book and then jumps out in like out of the comic book into this world, but we're still kind of reading. Like, I love the metafictional part of that where we're still reading this comic, and it just, oh man, that was really cool. That was, I have to admit, like the rest of the comic kind of turned into more of a setup for the next arc, which I understand, but that first half of that comic was so good.
I don't know much about Tom Strong, but I got the feeling he's got a legacy here that probably goes back a while.
I will admit, I'm just as ignorant as you.
So, and I've heard of this character before now. I mean, I've heard of him before, and I just never seen or read anything about him. So I was very intrigued by his story here. I got the sense that they did mention he was from a different Earth. So yeah, he's from one of the other Earths in the multiverse, which makes sense. His city was called Millennium, and it felt very futuristic, like a city of tomorrow kind of feel that you get not in today's world, but, you know, 30 years ago, a city of tomorrow would feel like.
That's exactly how it is. It's like the future, but a future envisioned, like you said, sometime in the past.
Yeah. So it had that feel to it, and I really enjoyed it. He had this connection to the villain Paul Sabine. There, you know, you could tell they've been foes for quite a while.
And then we get Dr. Doom.
Yes, we do. DC's version of Dr. Doom, which I just find it freaking hilarious.
I agree. I think he should consider green. I think green might be his color.
We see in the story, when we get back to the Terrifics, Mr. Terrifics give Rex a clean bill of health. He could find no traces of the metamorpho elemental power left in him.
For now.
And it made me think back to old Fantastic Four stories where the Thing got cured for a while. You know what I mean?
That's exactly what it felt like. Yeah, and I was like, okay, so he's gonna turn back into Metamorpho in a couple issues.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm expecting too. It's such a clear parody of Fantastic Four. It's freaking great.
Yeah.
Now we see Mr. Terrific accuse Stagg of being behind the Dark Energy Bond and everything else that's happened to the team thus far, and he also accuses him of being behind Dr. Dredd. I thought that was interesting, but they didn't really reveal anything except Stagg denying it.
Yeah, I don't think Stagg has anything to do with it, but I do wonder if Stagg's henchman is connected somehow. Because we've kind of had that little bit of foreshadowing every once in a while that he's clearly not a good guy, but he's not necessarily happy working under Stagg either.
Yeah, and feels very much like he knows more than he's letting on.
Yeah.
So, and Stagg, I don't know, he's just been kind of clueless.
Stagg is generally like a bad person, but is not like the most clever villain.
Obviously.
Or subtle villain, yeah.
So, Eventually, we have the Terrifics travel to Tom Strong's dimension, where they find his robot servant tied up by a plant, and the plant has dimensional barrier energies in it, and I thought that was intriguing.
Yeah.
And we see it transport the team to Tom Strong, who is caught in a trap in the Forest of Eternity, which I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I'm intrigued.
So what I'm really curious to see, so we've seen that clearly they've been building up towards them interacting with Tom Strong, is this, so it's clearly a Fantastic Four book, as we've discussed, is I'm curious to see how they're going to kind of move forward. It feels like, at least for a while, that Tom Strong is going to be a main character as well, and kind of how his presence impacts the team. I'm kind of curious to see that, and how it kind of impacts Lemire's writing also.
Yeah, I'm curious too. I'm wondering if Lemire's trying to spin a Tom Strong comic out of this.
Possible. Or if he's just, or if we're going to see the book kind of evolve a little bit, and it'll be like a Fantastic Five.
Yeah, that could be. Or maybe they'll just end up replacing Metamorpho with Tom Strong.
It's also possible.
So, you know, shake it up a little bit, but we'll see what happens. All right, well, that wraps up our comics talk for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so actually I have kind of a different shout out. I was this week, I listened to a really cool podcast. So Michael Rosenbaum, who I most listeners will know who he is, but he was the actor who played Lex Luthor on Smallville. He's got a podcast called Inside of You, and one of his somewhat recent podcast interviews, he interviewed Stephen Amell, who plays Arrow. And it's really cool. Like, they just kind of talk about his career and his personal life, and it's just really cool. If you ever kind of wanted to know about Stephen Amell, the person, and how he got to where he is, give it a listen. It was really good. It was just a really enjoyable episode.
I've got to check that out. Okay. For my shout out, I'm just going to shout out right now. Tales of the Station Volume 3 is on sale at Dragon Con. And I got a story in there called Earth Station DCU and the Crisis on Earth X. And I'm very excited to get my copy of it that should be coming in the next few weeks, and it going on sale on Amazon. I don't know exactly when that's going to be, because just like they did with Tales of the Station Volume 2 last year, it's on sale exclusively at Dragon Con right now, and then it'll go out on Amazon later. So very excited about that. And to let you know, I already started writing the sequel to that story. So I started that today, Cletus. I've got a good 600 words on it.
Nice.
So got that going. And I'm also working on Earth Station DCU is Marooned on Mogo. I'm doing a rewrite of it. So I'm also working on that. It has taken me quite a while to get these short stories done, just because a lot of my time's doing this podcast and not writing. Plus my two jobs and family life. But I am working on them, so. And definitely check out Earth Station DCU and the Crisis on Earth X. I think that's one of the best ones I've done so far, at least in my opinion. You guys might have a different opinion when you actually read it. But I really enjoyed writing it. And, of course, it deals with Cletus and I and our doppelgangers and that. So, very excited about that story. All right. If you'd like to shout out about anything we've talked about this week, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we're going to be talking Batgirl number 26, Batgirl Annual number 2, Nightwing Annual number 1. I think we're going to have a lot of Batgirl stuff going on. Plus, we're also going to be talking about the DC Villains Looney Tunes crossover. We got Catwoman and Tweety and Sylvester, Harley Quinn and Gossamer, Lex Luthor, Porky Pig, and the Joker, Daffy Duck. So, excited about checking some of those out. All right, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.